morning and welcome to MTSU on the Record. I'm Jenna Logue and we're coming to you from the campus of Middle Tennessee State University in Murfreesboro, Tennessee and the studios of WMOT-FM on the campus. The University Honors College has a new dean, Dr. Phil Mathis, whose particular specialty, his discipline, is biology, is retiring, and the new dean taking his place for the new academic year is Dr. John Vial, who is leaving the chairmanship of the Department of Political Science after 19 glorious, fun-filled years, and he's not even gray yet.
Getting there.
Getting there? Okay.
And I blame that on my children, so who knows?
They're all your children, John.
Well, I guess.
Dr. John Vial is here with us today, our most frequent guest on MTSU on the Record, only because I badger him into it. Thank you for
being here.
It's
a pleasure to be here.
Of course it is. That's your cue, John.
That's it. Okay.
Okay.
Dun, dun, dun.
the honors, one of the most fun things to do on this campus for me, both as a student as an employee, is to attend the honors lectures. And I have taken an honors course, an honors political science course, classical political science, under the guiding hand of Dr. Rob McDaniel. The honors college and the honors courses are for those students who feel they need a little extra stimulation. And it's a glory to see something like that on this campus. Do you have any plans in particular for how you want to advance that, or is this all so sudden?
Well, I've actually had quite a bit of experience with honors colleges going back to when I was in the honors program at William & Mary as an undergraduate. I don't know if you call it a walk-on, but I didn't qualify when I first applied, but after a year or two, one of my English professors nominated me, so I think I participated in the last 2 years there. Obviously, there'll be some things that we want to change, but as far as I can tell, you know, our Honors College is on a really good trajectory right now. I'm sure you do know that the Martin family contributed some money right at the beginning, actually, of Dr. McPhee's presidency, which, when matched, became the money that was used to build the Martin Honors College building that we have.
Which is named after Paul Martin Sr.
That's right. The Martins actually, one of them was actually the first graduate of the Honors Program here that I believe was started in 1973 on our campus. We're actually the first Honors College in a public institution in this state, and that's partly denoted by the fact that we do now have an honors dean rather than simply a chair or a director. As you've mentioned, we already have a fairly significant number of classes and also a lecture series. One of the things that we had trouble with in the early years of the Honors College was we had a lot of people taking courses, but not too many people graduating, and that partly that's because we have a fairly rigorous requirement of an undergraduate thesis. But one of the things that Dr. Mathis has done, and this was begun actually before him, but he has certainly worked over the last 4 years, I believe it has been, to get increased numbers of people actually completing their thesis. And I was able to direct actually the second thesis that I've directed this last spring. So that's, you know, real encouraging development.
An honors thesis is a rather rigorous undergraduate research, isn't it?
It is. I mean, it's doable, but I think, you know, many students are already intimidated by the thought of a term paper and the thought of doing a paper that may be two or three times as long and basically doing it pretty much on their own initiative, you know, coming up with a topic, coming up with a prospectus for it, and then seeing it to completion is perhaps more intimidating than it needs to be. The Honors College has already made some attempts to have a little seminar class to sort of prepare people for the expectations. And I feel fairly confident that we can get more people to do it.
How?
What year are you?
I'm a senior, John.
Well, wait till I start asking for money. That's the other job of an honors dean. So.
In the midst of a recession, you know this guy's got chutzpah, right? How do you maintain the academic high standards of the Honors College?
Well, part of it is structural. The Honors classes, if they're entry level can have 20 students. If they're an upper division, they can't have any more than 15 students in it. So that's part of it. Part of it is by the student's selection. People have to have, you know, 25 ACT, 3.5 grade point average coming in, or comparable grade point averages once they're here. And then the other is, you know, the Honors Dean works with various departments heads to try to pick out people in the college in the departments that are known as particularly good teachers. You mentioned Rob McDaniel teaches in our department. I know David Carlton has. Mark Burns, who's also now an associate dean, has taught in that program. Dr. Karen Peterson has taught. And so, you know, generally we aim to get people that are really interested in the program and that we know do well in the regular classes.
But since the Honors College is interdisciplinary, you're going to be interacting with people literally from every nook and cranny of the faculty.
That's exactly right. And, you know, Phil has done, well, Phil and John Paul and some of them, you know, the other two who've directed the Honors Program have done a good job with this in the past. I'm hoping that, you know, I've been a chair here for 19 years, and so I know almost all the department chairs by name and by discipline, and I'm hoping that that's going to be a plus in interacting and, you know, encouraging them to supply Honors College faculty at a time when, you know, we're having to cut back because of budget cuts and other considerations.
If I'm a professor, what motivation or incentive do I have to teach an honors course or deliver an honors lecture?
Well, we can actually look at it from both perspectives, the professor and the teacher. The professor hopefully will get students who are a little bit more likely to want to interact in discussion and that kind of thing. Some professors are particularly, you know, some professors are just sort of chalk and talk, and all they want to do is give a lecture. And I'm not saying you could never do that in an honors class, but I think most honors classes are more designed to facilitate discussion and interaction and that kind of thing. One positive point is, as I mentioned earlier, you're only going to have a class of 15 or 20 as opposed to perhaps a more average class size of 30 to 35. So, you know, we're asking faculty to do some more individual work with students, but we're also giving them the key to do it. In terms of the students themselves, we're looking for students who are willing to come into a class and contribute, you know, not just sit. I mean, we want sponges, obviously. We want people who can absorb things, but we also want people who can contribute. And, you know, certainly one consideration is if you're going to graduate or law school, they look for participation in honors classes. Particularly if you're going to graduate school, if you've done an undergraduate thesis, that probably is going to put you in the top 5 or 10% of students nationally, and that, you know, most students at the undergraduate level are not going to be doing that. So it's a real plus in being accepted there. One of the things that I've done over the last couple of years is help with the Phi Kappa Phi scholarships. Phi Kappa Phi is one of the honoraries that we have on campus, one of the more prestigious ones. And we've been very successful in the last 5 to 7 years in getting nominees for this. In a couple occasions, we've had the only one in the state to get an award for $5,000 to $7,000. And we noticed one of the things that they really look for on the application is, you know, did you have an honors program? Did you participate in it? How much did you participate? And so obviously people outside the school as well as those here are looking, you know, looking for this credential.
Is the ideal honors college student someone who has taken advanced placement courses? And what if you have a really bright student coming in from high school, from, say, a small town where there was no advanced placement college
well,
credit
again,
course
I mean,
offered?
The criteria, as I understand them, involve grades and ACT scores, and they're not dependent on coming in with advanced placement courses. Obviously, the kind of student that would take advanced placement courses in schools where they had it would be good honor students, but we certainly wouldn't exclude others that, you know, meet the test and the grade criteria.
Have you ever encountered, or is it possible that a very intelligent student who has made good grades all his or her life can come in from high school or a prep school and then get into honors work because it was recommended by their guidance counselor that they do so and whatever, and then get into it and just be totally flummoxed and think, am I in over my head, or is this just the freshman I'm not acclimated yet to the new environment blues?
And I think that's the kind of thing that can happen to students whether they're in honors or not. We do occasionally get students that will come in here, you know, and that have never gotten a B in high school and pretty quickly find out that that's pretty standard fare in college. But I don't think that we would anticipate particularly more trouble at the honors level than we would anywhere else.
There is help available also for honors students. As a matter of fact, there is a dormitory that is particularly, especially for honors students.
Sadly, I'm afraid the dormitories that we've had over the past couple of years, about the only thing distinctive about them is that, well, initially they had a lab, which was sort of unique. But then the only real distinction was that you're in with other honor students. But my understanding is that we're now completing renovating a dormitory just for honors college students. And I think it is going to be a little bit a cut above the normal accommodations here.
Honors doesn't just mean academic excellence. Honors also means integrity. Not that non-honor students aren't expected to adhere to standards of academic integrity, but I think the bar is set a little higher, not in terms of policy, but in terms perhaps of personal expectations for honors students.
Well, you know, one of the fascinating things, if you go by the Martin Honors Building, when they did the architecture for it, they actually have, if I recall, right up on the top, but it may be somewhere else on the building, but they have various qualities of character, integrity, and whatever that they think are important. So
that are literally pillars of the building.
Well, they are, yes, indeed. And, you know, certainly that's something that I would hope we could stress.
Any sadness or regrets about leaving Poli Sci?
No sadness about where I'm going, but it's going to be hard to leave political science. I've been teaching political science for 31 years, and I was 8 years chair of a political science or a social science department prior to coming here, and then I've been a department chair here for 19 years. All my friends are there, or a lot of my friends are there. Have a lot of good students. I'm hoping, and we're going to have to see what the workload is like. But I've been coaching mock trial here also close to 20 years, and I'm hoping that that's something I'm going to be able to continue at least in part. And not all of those are political science students, but a good number of them are.
In your new capacity, I can't imagine you altering your management style at all. You're still going to take this hands-on approach. I mean, there are going to be kids coming in and out of your office saying, Dr. Vile this and Dr. Vile that.
I hope so. I mean, I've been one. I've always had an open-door policy in the department. And I like being around students, especially, I think, in the first couple of years as honors dean. I mean, I have some idea what it's going to be like, but I'm going to have a learning curve. There are going to be some things that I need to learn, and I don't really know any better way to do it than just to be there. Is it Woody Allen says, 90% of life is showing up? I plan to show up.
With your usual array of colorful political ties, of course.
Yes, and Mark Burns, I think. Two comments that I particularly liked about my accession to Honors Dean. One was Dr. Giebert, who's the provost, saying I had a good laugh, which I thought was a good compliment. And the second was my friend Dr. Burns, who said that I have a great collection of political ties. So.
You have the only collection of political ties I know.
Well, I'm the only one who can wear them without embarrassment, apparently.
Well, I mean, you know, Mark's office is full of Sox the Cat and, you know, presidential.
He got that from me, by the way.
Presidential shaving lotion.
I told him
lotion.
It was a babe magnet. I don't know if it's worked or not.
It better not work. He's married.
Well, that's right. Okay, Julie didn't hear that.
Sorry, Julie. As you depart Poli Sci, you leave it in the capable hands and the heavy-duty walking stick of one Dr. Clyde Willis.
I do.
Tell me about the new interim dean.
Well, Dr. Willis has been here probably about 10 years now. He's a full professor. He's, like me, he's in the pre-law area. What's unique, actually, in our department is he's the only person in our department who has both a JD and a PhD. He's probably also the only person on this campus who has been mayor of a town before becoming, I think that was his first career before coming into academe. But he's done that. He has coached our mediation teams here, which, as you may know, actually won the national championship this year, and they've done it on a number of other occasions. So he's very engaged with the students, very much sort of an open-door guy, you know, much the same way that I am, very well-liked by students and faculty. And I think he's going to have an awesome year.
and a promoter of international relations.
He's
married to a lady from Russia.
Well, he sure is. And again, you know, our department is actually looking into, we're actually proposing this month a master's degree in international affairs.
Which has to be signed off on by the Tennessee Board
that's
of
right.
Regents.
That's right. It's being sent up to the Board of Regents. It's actually been there once, and now it's being sent back with some revisions. But it looks like it's on track, and certainly Dr. Willis is one, I think, that is, you know, committed to that program and would do a good job with it.
And if that is approved by the TBR, it will be the first master's degree in political science offered at MTSU. Is that correct?
Well, we actually had a degree here before I got here. I got here 19 years ago, and we used to have a joint degree with Tennessee State University that, if I recall correctly, ended up sort of being transformed into the public administration degree that's currently at TSU. So I don't know that we've actually had a master's in political, well, in foreign affairs, but we have had one in public administration before.
Getting back to the Honors College for a minute, if your student is looking at things pragmatically and he says to you, if I put down Honors College student and everything that that entails on my resume as I go to look for my very first job out in the cold, cruel world, is that going to impress an employer?
Well, it will certainly impress graduate and law schools. I know that from, you know, having written countless recommendation letters for people. I think if employers understand what, you know, that the Honors College does call forth an extra level of devotion, commitment to classes, and particularly if we're talking about someone who's actually written an honors thesis, I don't know how it could help but impress somebody. But again, it may be up to the student to explain, you know, that there's honors and there's honors. I mean, there's some people in and out of a course or two, and, you know, whatever experience they have is good. But then you have people that have taken up to 30 hours of coursework and that have also written a thesis. So part of it is them themselves being able to sell it.
And talk about self-discipline and time management. Those are two qualities that are absolutely crucial if an honor student is going to be successful.
They are. And, you know, to me, you know, I had two daughters, and I've told this story before, but, you know, both of them got in some very prestigious schools. And we sort of sat down, you know, they were twins, so they were both going at once, and the financial repercussions were a little bit more severe than they might be for ordinary families. But, you know, we looked at it and basically said, well, you know, we can help you for 4 years wherever you want to go, but that's probably going to be it. If you come to a state school where you have some support and where the fees are lower, then we can help you through graduate school. And that's that, you know, both the one daughter got cheated in the sense that she finished 2 degrees in 4 years, so it wasn't that big a deal, the one that went to UTK. But the one who came here went on and subsequently got actually 2 law degrees, one at William & Mary, one at George Washington University. And she told me when she graduated at William & Mary, she was one of the few students in her class that did not have significant loans.
And people might not think of a state-supported university as the kind of university that could prepare a student adequately for a William & Mary or a Harvard or a Duke.
Well, I mean, we have, you know, Dr. Mathis probably has a better grip on this right now than I do, but we sent students to here from here to Oxford, you know, William & Mary, places all over the country. And, you know, one of our key supporters is James Buchanan, who, as you know, is one of the early graduates of MTSU, and I suppose
Nobel Prize winner.
To my knowledge,
he's one of 3 Nobel Prize winners associated with the school.
No, associated, but in terms of someone who actually graduated from here.
Right.
I believe he's
the only one.
He would be the only one, but you're right. I mean, we have an economist who taught here for a while, and then also, of course, Al Gore, who has also taught here.
Yeah. What does the Honors College do for the image of Middle Tennessee State University? Does it keep us from being referred to as Little Middle anymore?
With our enrollment and, you know, knowing how our students have done, I would hope if that term is used, it's used only as a term of endearment. It's not particularly accurate anymore. We're really not very little. As you know, we have the largest undergraduate population in the state. But again, and, you know, in terms of just achievements of students, you know, my experience as a pre-law advisor, which is where most of my experience is that, you know, our students are capable and succeed in schools all over the country. I think certainly ours are as capable as any.
You might not have had the opportunity or the time to do this kind of investigating yet, but I wonder if any one particular major or one particular college dominates honors students more than any other.
I don't think so. I mean, I know from working with Phi Kappa Phi, with their scholarships, that we certainly had some pre-law students, including my own daughter, who got that 1 year. But we've also had people from biology, economics, other colleges. My impression of going to some of the award ceremonies is that they seem to be, you know, fairly widespread throughout the campus in terms of disciplines.
So you think there are as many from the sciences as there are from the humanities?
I would think so. I mean, we have a very good reputation on this campus for our pre-med students. And, you know, I'm sure that many of them, the biology, chemistry, physics majors, number of them are certainly involved in the honors colleges, as are the, you know, the pre-law and many of the other disciplines on campus.
The fall and spring lecture series topics, and teachers for that matter, probably already have been set. But what sort of criteria do you plan to use in the future in thinking about possible overall broad topics for the lecture series that is held each semester?
One thing that I want to do, I'm thinking a little bit ahead, but in 2011, MTSU is going to be celebrating its centennial. And I think one set of topics that would certainly be interesting would be to have a set that actually gives people who are working on historical or other articles related to MTSU to have the floor for a semester or two.
It'll be a banner year for history majors that year.
Well, and again, it may not be 11, it may be that we need to do it a year or two before, so that to sort of give a boost to people who want to do some research in that area and need a little incentive to do it. One of the things I've thought about, and you know, obviously I want to talk with the associate dean over there and with some of the other good employees that they already have, but is occasionally at least sort of sending out a survey to MTSU professors and see if any of them are working on a project that might be suitable to a lecture series that might also later be suitable for editing in the form of a book. A year or two ago, I was at a conference on James Madison in Shreveport, Louisiana, and gave a couple papers there and then ended up having the opportunity to be the co-editor of a very nice volume that's coming out from Ohio University Press on Madison. And, you know, I don't know that we could do something like that every year, but I think from time to time it would certainly be nice to think about having something that not only had an immediate, you know, benefit for the students, but might have a more long-term benefit as well.
Are you talking about something more in the form of an encyclopedic volume or a dictionary-type reference book, or are you talking about a coffee table book with pictures that reflects on the 100
years? Neither
of
them, actually. I mean, if, for example, we were to have we're not going to do this, but to use the Shreveport model, if we were to have had a lecture series on James Madison, you know, one dealing with Dolly, one dealing with his presidency, another dealing with the Constitutional Convention, then you could appropriately then bind them up and edit them as a single volume. Again, that's not the topic we would do, but, you know, we might be able to do something like that with MTSU history. You know, different periods of history at MTSU, one focusing maybe on administration, one on faculty members, one on the physical plant. I think that would interest students and would also be something that might later be put out in publishable form.
What about multimedia technology? You already have great capability in
we
the
do.
Auditorium in the Honors College.
Well, and if I believe also the auditorium now is on the first floor, but I believe on the second floor, there's another room where there's about $300,000 worth of technology. And certainly, I think Dr. Mathis and I both probably going to have some people lead us around sometimes to explain what buttons to turn on when. But, you know, certainly if we have those kind of capabilities, we need to use them not only for the Honors College, but also for the rest of the university.
And what about promoting the Honors College? Any plans for increasing people's knowledge about it? Any plans for expanding publicity of it?
Well, you know, I'm hoping. One advantage I have as a political scientist is that a lot of people call me about other things. And so I'm hoping at the very least to put in a plug for what I'm now doing when they do that.
You want to tell that anecdote?
Oh.
The guy who called you at home?
Oh, yes. Someone called me very recently saying he had seen that I was promoted to honors dean and that I was a political scientist, and could I tell him why Puerto Ricans were voting in the presidential election? So, you know, that's one way. The Honors College already has a very nice newsletter, and that's something that I've been doing at the departmental level for close to 20 years. So that's something I want to be involved in. There's also a literary magazine called The Collage, and we have a particular employee actually designated right now to oversee that. But that gives some prestige to the college. The lecture series, as you mentioned, one of the things I'd like to do is bring a few more outsiders in for the lecture series, as well as people from the campus itself. So I think there are all kinds of possibilities. Dr. Mathis has put together just an extraordinary advisory council for the Honors College, and they meet formally either once or twice a year. But certainly, you know, one of the things to do is just sort of let them know ongoing activities that are taking place in the Honors College.
You think we can attract outstanding scholars and lecturers?
Well, you know, certainly we already have. Governor Bredesen was here last year. We had a military leader, and
The gentleman was in charge of naval intelligence.
Right. And, you know, we've had other good speakers. And again, you know, part of the draw here is, as you probably know, we have some scholars named right now after James Buchanan. And that name itself tends to bring some people here. You know, I know who he is. Mm-hmm. Must be a good institution. So certainly we're hoping to draw on that in part.
With the recession and budget cuts kicking in, any monetary concerns?
Well, that's always a concern. But, you know, again, one of the parts of this job is occasionally to ask people for money. But my understanding of that is, you know, the best way to do that is just maintain contacts with people. Let them know what you're doing. You know, people are willing to give to education, and they're particularly willing to give to quality education. And, you know, they're the two things that we have over there in the college.
What about financial aid? Anything special for honors students?
Well, again, the most sort of the head project right now are these Buchanan scholars. I believe we have, I can't remember if there's 20 total or if there's 20 a year. But these are pretty much full ride scholarships that are given to outstanding students who participate in the honors program. And then there are, you know, various other scholarships and awards that are given for people during their tenure here.
You're going to have to put the bell on some kind of a record or something, you know, do a tape loop or something like that.
I like the bell. William and Mary, we had a bell, and I think we owe that to John Paul Montgomery, who was in charge when that building was being designed. And somebody told me I would be the only dean with his own bell, and I said, well, I hope they're not choosing me because they think I'm a ding-a-ling.
Or because you look like Quasimodo and you have to
whatever.
Go out there. Well, the University Honors College is one of the true shining lights of this campus. And if you want to know more about it, does your child qualify? How do I get in it? How do I get financial aid to participate in it? What sorts of standards are required? The contact information is?
Well, it'll be me, I suppose, jvile@mtsu.edu. But there's also, we got a bevy of secretaries and advisors and administrators over there. There's also an associate dean. And so, you know, you could simply look up the Honors College and give us a call or email them. They have a really nice website that students can go to and reply there as well.
And if you can't find the website, go to mtsu.edu and go to the A to Z Index and then click on H.
That should do it.
And that'll send you down to the link for Honors College. Dr. John Vial, thank you for being with us again.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
This is MTSU on the Record. I'm Jenna Logue. Please join us again at this same time next Sunday. In the meantime, go to www.mtsunews.com and check out the newly updated podcast page where you can download all of these programs at your leisure. And don't forget, we're also available on iTunes.